This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 High FM. It is 6 minutes past 11. Sorry, thank you so much for joining us. It still catches me a little bit off guard this earlier time slot, an hour earlier. But thank you, everybody, for joining, and thank you for being with us over here. Yes, all eyes on the Reserve Bank. Let's see what happens over there. It has a huge implication for the economy. It affects so many working class South Africans, and it just has a ripple effect across every facet of our lives. And it's quite important that everything is taken into consideration. But yet, often what we wish for is lower interest rates, because it allows us to pay less for our debt. And sometimes what we need is higher interest rates in order to make sure that the economy runs efficiently. So it's a really, really big balancing act, and it takes time. But today we are focusing on a totally different topic. I remember having this discussion with John T. Sachs, who's a partner at Joltech, many years ago when this project first came out. It was really pie in the sky, so to speak. It was blue sky idea, solar energy, and the whole concept was very, very foreign. It was really a maverick idea for its day, but yet many, many people invested and many people got involved. And now we are at the other end of the project. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome back John T. Sachs from Joltech. John T., welcome back.
Avi, thank you. Good to be back.
Great. John T., I was only joking about your tie. You don't have to worry about it. You can turn your camera back on. No one can see you. It's fine. John T., take us back. Many years ago, the South African government, together with SARS, came up with this idea that they called Section 12J investments. And really what it did is allowed South Africans to invest in certain investment structure products that would be give them a tax break at point A. But then as time would happen, as life would happen, and the project would then come to fruition after 5 years, there would be certain tax consequences. How did that all work?
So you know, Avi, I think what's brilliant, and not often people say this about the South African government, is what's brilliant is they, to some degree, encourage tax incentives in South Africa. And what is so smart about Section 12J is it mobilized private capital into certain segments of the market which needed it, which is SMEs. And the real focus was actually venture capital. So there's a very smart incentive from the government to encourage the private sector to invest into SMEs. And it really took years, but it gained a lot of momentum, a lot of traction. It was around for about 10 years. The last 4 years were monumental period for the incentive. Around 14 billion rand through private individuals was invested into Section 12J companies or venture capital companies, and that mobilized a lot of capital. A lot of the capital didn't go into venture capital. It went into lower risk investments, which, you know, for investors kind of makes sense. You'd rather put your money where you know it's going to be some level of capital preservation. But it had a meaningful impact. Investors got a really nice tax break. A similar scenario exists with Section 12B solar investments, which we are very active in, and that incentive is still around, and please God, it'll be around for many years to come. But when we spoke about Section 12J, the big allure was this 100% tax deduction, which is marvelous. The problem is on exit. So you now, hopefully you got some returns from the investment, but from a SARS tax perspective, the entire amount falls into your taxable income. So let's assume for a moment you invested a million rand, and let's say you didn't get any growth in and you got your million rand back. You're paying capital gains tax on the million rand. So if you're in the highest bracket, that's 180,000 rand that you're going to have to pay to SARS. And I think many investors maybe were deaf to the consequences in 5 years' time, but that is now a reality. By the end of next month, end of June, every Section 12J investment would have reached its maturity date. From a compliance perspective, And it's now up to the fund managers to exit those investors and give them a return. But with that return is going to be a nasty blow from a tax perspective.
But there is a silver lining from what I understand. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Jonty, Jaltek, welcome back. So let's recap. You were saying that, let's say a person put in R1 million, so regardless of their income, there was no limit to what they could invest and they would get a tax deduction. But at the end of the day, their base cost was seen as zero and therefore capital gains would be paid on the full amount. So if, not in the worst case scenario, in a scenario where the fund or this investment returned nothing and the capital was returned to the investor, they're going to take a bath for, let's say, R118,000. But on the other hand, how big was the tax deduction? So it's not a lose-lose situation.
No, it's not. So, you know, let's assume everyone who invested was in the highest tax bracket. They would have got R450,000 tax benefit on R1 million investment. Okay. Fast forward 5 years later, then I have to pay SARS R180,000. So the difference is 270. So the arbitrage they would have received, the tax benefit would be 270. And if you want to get really technical, they'd also get the time value of money on the 450. You know, they'd have the 450 for 5 years. They can invest it or deposit it somewhere. So they'll get the time value of money on the 450. And then the net difference of 270 is, you know, ultimately what they would have gotten as a net benefit. But as with all of us, the 450 is gone. It's either been spent or invested or a bit of both. But these investors now need to fork out R180,000. In the example that I've given.
Now this guy's running up the stairs to your office and he's past security, but he's coming for the door and someone's just gone to the bathroom, so it's open. What have you got to offer him? Yeah. Is there a way that he can not take his money, roll it over, and somehow limit the pain?
Yeah, so there are. So there's your conventional option, which is investing into an RA. So an investment into an RA will reduce your taxable income, and not to get too technical, but ultimately that will reduce your capital gains tax event and your exit, your Section 12J exit tax. That's your one option. We've come up with an innovative option. We're the largest Section 12B tax incentive solar fund manager, bit of a mouthful. And what we are offering our investors and other Section 12J investors is to say, the capital that you receive back, invested with us, will allocate 24% of it into a Section 12B investment. And that allocation will most likely reduce your tax obligation around Section 12J to zero. The balance goes into our latest private debt fund, which is offering return income or dividend returns from private debt investments. And this will then give investors exposure to two funds. They won't pay their extra tax. They'll get annual distributions from the performance of the investments, and they'll get really, really good diversification. The nice thing is you're not going to pay the tax. You'll get a return on the capital you would have paid to SARS, which is obviously very beneficial. And it's a great diversification option. And we're seeing a lot of our investors take this up. And, you know, we've opened it to the market.
Jonty, I'm just getting two men coming through here. These are obviously people in the financial services sector. They're saying, is it a prerequisite that someone needs to exit the original investment? In other words, do they need to take the capital? Yeah. Okay, so they need to trigger that capital gain.
Well, it all depends on the fund's mandate, but I can't imagine any Section 12J fund managers that have a mandate to remain in for the next 5 or 10 years. Most Section 12J investments that I'm aware of, after 5 years, investors want their money out.
Yeah, I suppose the logic of the question is that if they don't take it, they don't.
That is the case, but I would think that all Section 12J fund managers are going to want investors to exit.
Okay. Let's just take a step back. You know, if you look at it across, it's 14 billion across the country. You said something really important at the end of your press release, that that money stayed in the country. And not only did it stay in the country, it went to build SMEs, which means that for every job that was created, 14 people roughly were fed. So the knock-on effect is absolutely massive. The question is, how many of those incentives were successful? Do you know that stat offhand?
No, listen, I don't know the stat. The industry, to lobby government to extend Section 12, Jay. So it always had an end date. When it was introduced 10 years later, it was ending. And, we then got involved to lobby Treasury to extend it. And one of the stats was how many jobs have been created, how many investments have been made. And I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but it was a material number. 14 billion rand is a huge amount of money. But it fell on deaf ears, and it's a pity, because if you look at the success of 12J, if you look at the success of 12B, a lot of private capital, which would most certainly have gone out of the country, had to remain in for a long period of time, and created opportunities. And I think that it's clear from these incentives that there's a big opportunity for government to involve the private sector in certain sectors of the market. For example, with both of us live in Joburg, water is a huge issue. So an incentive around water, I'm not sure exactly what that could look like, but would make a lot of sense. Funding small businesses, investing in small companies. There's a lot of appetite from the private sector, and it would be further enhanced if there was favorable tax incentives. And it's a pity that our government isn't pushing this, because I think there's a big opportunity to tap into a huge source of capital.
Don't you, we need to take a quick break and run to the shops. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Jonty Sachs from Joltec, welcome back. I was just quickly looking up during the break. I can't find the exact conversation, but I'm sure you've heard of Dr. Frans Cournier. Is just an incredible mind, an incredible analyst, and a true patriot, a true South African. He gave a talk quite recently that was sobering, infuriating, and comforting at the same time. Because without getting into the technical terms that I don't remember, he basically said what happens in South Africa, wherever government is short, private sector fills in. And they fill in the most incredible way, the level of professionalism, efficiency, world-class standards. So the more the government drops the ball, the more private sector picks it up. And therefore, that's how the country keeps running. So his basic logic was that no matter how fraught the government gets, private sector will always prop it up. And what we then need is Treasury, together with government, to recognize that and say, hold on, if we allow private sector to generate funds or create funds that can generate capital, start private sector initiatives, then we're good to go. I mean, we all remember the OUTsurance pothole story that somehow got stopped for some reason that no one can explain. And now Discovery's come back with the pothole patrol, whatever it's called. So there is a lot of these. But let's go back to the core, the nub of the issue, is that once people have got out of that initiative, which has now come to an end, we've got initiatives now that replace 12J. What are they?
The main initiative that replaces it is Section 12B, and that's a solar initiative. So where taxpayers invest to a structure, which I'll give you the example that we have. So investors invest into a partnership with us. We take their capital, we buy solar equipment, we install it on a business's roof or a farm's prop, and we then sell electricity using the panels and the inverters that we purchased using our investors' capital, and we sell the electricity produced to the owner of the property or the tenant of the property. And by doing that, the investors who invest with us sell to a tax benefit. And the tax benefit is 100% tax deductible. So just like Section 12J, if you invested 1 million rand with us into a solar product, you could deduct 100% of that against your taxable income, and then you'll enjoy the returns generated from the solar. So we raised and managed and administer over 2 billion rand across, I think, in the region of investors. And we have about 250 commercial solar systems, 8,000 residential systems that we administer. And it's an incredible incentive for taxpayers. And they're benefiting exactly what Frans Grenier had mentioned. They're benefiting from sectors of the market where government has failed. And that's electricity. And as a result, this tax incentive has really taken off. There's no termination date, which government is, so hopefully it'll be around for many years. But it's a really smart way to generate a nice return and be really significantly de-risked from a tax. And I think Frans Grenier used the example, and I was listening to the same talk around logistics. Transnet have failed with the railway lines, and what has the private sector done? They've introduced trucks and freight. And I think there's more and more opportunities in South Africa to take advantage of other tax incentives which government could introduce to fill the gaps or the holes that government has created.
John, you use the term gaps and holes when you talk about road and freight. I just maybe want to mention, I had a staff member going out to see a client in near Lydenburg area. The road has been so bad for the last 4 or 5 years that people don't use it. They've created a side road that people use. And I got a call from the staff member, who's a lady who came back from the client on, I think it was Tuesday night or Wednesday night, very shaken about how bad it was and how pitch dark it was. And I was upset because I didn't want her to drive in the dark, and I had given instruction, but she stayed at the client for whatever reason. But her anxiety was because somebody had just been killed on that road. Yeah. And that is simply because government infrastructure in rail has broken down to the point that it's no longer functional in that area, number one. Number two, the roads keep starting and stopping because it's a political bouncing ball that gets thrown between. And the whole thing is just so sad. People just want to go to work and want to come back to work safe. And this person died simply because the road just wasn't up to scratch. But John, we are running out of time. But Vuzo's had a question here for a few minutes. He said, please ask your guest if his investment incentive is similar to a unit trust, where I'll be getting dividends or payouts from time to time.
It's very far removed from a unit trust. But on the income perspective, yes. So these investments pay out annual income distribution. So not a dividend, an income payment. And that happens on an annual basis.
Okay. Is there a historical track record that people can look into, or is this just throwing a dart and hoping it lands somewhere?
No. We've got multiple funds. Each have a historical track record. But new investments onto new funds, and those funds will have their own portfolio of solar and generate their own returns. But as a business, we've got many years of really positive returns, especially in the solar. And in the Section 12J market, I haven't seen any fund manager outperform us. So our returns in 12J have been really good.
Okay, Donty, two more questions for you. One is from a listener. What is the minimum amount I need to invest?
So technical answer at the moment, in the solar, it's 250,000 Rand. In the private debt, the technical answer is it's 1 million at the moment, but we'll file a prospectus with SIPSE shortly, and then that'll drop our minimum to 250,000.
And John, a question from me. We've had this discussion before. It wasn't actually a discussion. It was more a statement that you made, and I'd just like to discuss it with you. The government's really recently increased the limit for the upper end of investment into retirement annuities and similar funds. What's your feeling on those investments in general?
Listen, I'm no expert in RAs. As a relatively young person, I'm in my 40s, I wouldn't want my money tied up in a fund where it's very difficult to access it up until I think 55, and in a fund where the government can have prescribed assets. You know, so I think a certain portion of, and I could be talking nonsense, but a certain portion of RAs are into prescribed assets or can be into prescribed assets where government can really force investment. And that for me, to be able to, for government to tap into my retirement, I wouldn't want it. But I imagine having a diversified portfolio of a tax incentive with RAs might make sense. But again, I'm no expert.
Fantastic. Yonti, as always, thank you so much. And thank you for always being available. It's nice to chat to you again. And let's touch base closer towards the end of the year and see how things are fared.
Sounds good. Thanks for your time. Thanks, everyone.
Pleasure. Thank you so much. Cheers. Please go have go ahead and have a look at Jaltech. It's J-A-L-T-E-C-H. Go have a look at the website. They've been around for many, many years. And I know that the majority of listeners listening to what Jonty and I just spoke about are shrugging their shoulders and saying, yeah, it was going very well until I heard how much we have to invest. But if you are one of those people who do have that type of money, and there's no limit as to how you can invest, and you are looking for some sort of ability to pay less tax by investing money, this is something that I would suggest you go have a look at. Upfront, it's not advice at all. I'm not recommending that you do it. I'm recommending that it is a solution that could provide a bit of relief for you, but you need to do your due diligence, do your homework, go have a look and go look at it. And that's what we do here on the Avion Money Show, is that we bring ideas, investment portfolios, investment opportunities to the fore that most people don't know about, that are there, totally legitimate, pushed by government, are available, but people don't know about it. And the first thing that I would do is I would call up my accountant. If you're running a business and you maybe have an auditing firm that does that also, call them, ask for a meeting, and say you want to talk about 12J. You want to talk about an investment opportunity that is tax deductible. How does it suit you? How does it suit you as an individual? And that's something that I would really, really go and explore, go have a look at, because ultimately we want to try to keep every penny in the rand, every cent in the rand that we earn. We pay a lot of tax in so many different ways, whether it's by buying fuel, whether it's by buying a property, whether it's by just buying groceries on a daily basis. We don't get help, so many of us, from government for our schooling, for our education, for the staff that we employ domestically. There's very little tax break. And as more affluent South Africans emerge, this resentment begins to build, that I give government a lot of money in tax, but yet certain things that in other first world countries are provided via my tax are not provided, but yet there are opportunities. So please go have a look and just go and explore that. I didn't want to correct Jonty on air, but as you know, I don't live in South Africa anymore. I have the privilege of living in Israel. And water, electricity, and those things are not a problem. If we have a what we call hafsakat chashmal, which means electricity pause or break for 15 minutes for whatever reason, the whole of Modi'in, you know, is almost militant about the scenario, and we just look at each other and smile because. We know it'll come right. It will be corrected. You might have to set your clocks in the house again on your oven, but that's the biggest inconvenience that you'll have. And, you know, it's just interesting to hear what is happening in South Africa on an ongoing basis and how people are able to take advantage of that. Doesn't diminish the fact that there is gross negligence on government's part, but not providing basic services that hardworking South Africans pay tax loyally and legally for on an ongoing basis and are just not being provided. But what I want to spend the next few minutes talking about is that a few questions have come through to say that your guest, Tabiso, says your guest was very interesting. I love the topic, but I didn't really understand how the tax deduction works. Please, could you explain it in layman's terms? And Tabiso, I think often you are the spokespeople for many people who didn't want to ask that. Let's take a scenario where you earn R1 million, and of that R1 million, and again, this is not accurate, you have to pay, as John T. said, roughly R240,000 tax to the government, because that's your bracket and that's what you have to pay. Whether it's correct or not correct, there or thereabouts is good enough for the example. If you took that money and you said to SARS, I have invested it in a Section 42 or a 12J investment, you would be allowed to do that. And that full amount would be tax deductible. In other words, what it would do is it would reduce the amount of tax that you needed to pay. The government will no longer see that you earned R1 million. They'll see that you earned R1 million less the amount that you invested, which would bring your tax bracket down, which would bring your taxability down. And that's how those things work. Again, these days, there's no reason to be coy. Go on to ChatGPT, go on to Copilot, go on to more sophisticated financial AI, and just simply ask the question. And it'll give you the answers and it'll give you mechanisms to understand how these things work. Then ask for examples. Then take it to your accountant. Say, this is the research I've done. This is what I understand. What do you feel? How do you feel this would benefit me? So that's the way these incentives work. The next question comes up from Zanella, wants to know, can I use this deduction together with the IRA? And the answer is yes. The two separate issues all together, the two separate tax deductions, the two separate sections in the Tax Act. So you can definitely do that. But again, if it's a tax-related issue, speak to your accountant. If you don't have an accountant and you have that money lying around and you want to do it, I would strongly advise that maybe you pay for a consultant, consultation with an accountant. Or if you don't want to go there, go into SARS's website and ask the question to the bot. In the bottom right-hand corner, if you go into SARS's website, there'll be a bot. Ask the question and see what answers you get. If you're not sure how to ask it, ask AI how you should frame it. Speak to AI, tell them the story, tell you what your situation is, tell them what you earn, and let AI frame the question for you so that you know it's going to be succinct when you put it in. So these days, there are just so many tools at your disposal and so many ways to help you. Let's take a quick break. We will be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
So just to come back to what we were mentioning at the beginning, just before John T. joined us, and that's the interest rate decision that's happening. The Reserve Bank sits every quarter, it's four times a year, and they make this decision as to what's going to happen with interest rates. There are so many factors that influence it, and I think the one thing that the Reserve Bank will be looking very closely at the moment is the Straits of Hormuz, just off the coast of Iran. What's happening? Not all the world's oil goes through there. In fact, a very small portion of the world's oil goes through there. But the portion that does go through there feeds some of the world's largest economies. So a stranglehold on that has a knock-on effect around the world. And what South Africa needs to do, and the Reserve Bank being the custodian of this, needs to make sure that South Africa is still relevant within the world when it comes to interest rates. Because South Africa needs to attract foreign capital. South Africa still needs to be a destination for investment. And South Africa still needs to be able to borrow and in some cases lend money. And if your interest rates are out of whack totally, it's very, very difficult to do that. South Africa has always had something called an interest rate arbitrage, which means that our interest rates amounts are higher. So people just depositing money in our institutions would be able to earn a safe return by just having money in the bank, so to speak. Their risk would be in the movement of the currency. The rand is volatile, but not as volatile as many of you would think. I don't know if you remember the days when the rand started falling. It was in the late 80s, early 90s, just as I finished school, was in university and started working, and the rand was all over the show. But if you look at it now, the rand has really moved within a band. We've got a dollar rand calculation that we need to look at. And we need to look at an American economy. And we also have a rand calculation, a rand arbitrage against other emerging markets. And that's where the South African rand really, really plays. It plays as one of the most traded currencies in the emerging market area. It is stable, it is backed by a solid economy. Yes, don't raise your eyebrows. Despite everything, it's a solid economy. Not growing where it should, and we all know the reason for that. But it is an economy that is growing because we have a burgeoning middle class. And yes, a lot of people say it's been wiped out, but if you look at the middle class now and the demography of that middle class, it is growing. And the spending power is increasing. I was just having a chat recently, not really, just before the show, to a colleague of mine, and we were discussing the spending power of the certain communities in the rural areas. And you know, rural areas we tend to think are made up of very rich farmers and big businesses like mines, plantations, factories that produce materials from raw materials in the area, whether it's fruit canning plants, whether it's sugarcane factories. And yet the working class, the majority of people working there really earn minimum wage. That is really changing. And we were talking more specifically in the mining sector, and we were talking within one section of that mining sector where the average salary is 30,000 rand and above. So a person coming in with no experience, no knowledge, can start earning that type of salary very, very quickly. And the interesting thing that we are seeing, and I say we, it's myself in my company, together with my staff, talking to colleagues, is that there's been a tremendous mind shift. For so many years, there was this almost recklessness with disposable income, where for so long and for maybe generations, there was this generational idea of that we've been kept down. We weren't able to earn. We're now earning. We would like to have all the bling that we can. We would like to enjoy it. And yet we've moved on from that very quickly within a short space, one or two or three generations, where asset preservation is most important. Owning a house that is unencumbered by a mortgage, driving a vehicle that is reliable, that is cost-effective, is important. And most probably the most important thing is educating your children with the best education that you can possibly find. So what we are finding is there is a lot of disposable income, and that generation is definitely moving up and are starting to spend in certain areas. And that is definitely having a ripple effect on the economy. But if the government pushes interest rates up too high, that limits that sector from buying property, from buying vehicles, from even taking a short-term loan in order to furnish a home, for example, over a year that they can afford the repayments comfortably, which means that they've budgeted for it and it's over. But on the other hand, if interest rates are low, it doesn't encourage people to put money in the bank because all of a sudden they could make better returns by investing their money in other assets, other type of investments. And yeah, I'm talking but unit trusts and the like. In other words, investing in the market through different mechanisms. And that's why the interest rate is absolutely vital and so important to the way the economy works. And our Reserve Bank really looks at what we call an inflation-driven model. They look at inflation, and inflation is really the barometer as to how to move and juggle the interest rates. But that doesn't take away from the historical truth that interest rates are cyclical. They tend to go up, peak, and then go down, trough, and come back up. There are shocks to the market, corona, a massive war. Those type of things will change the trajectory very quickly and very suddenly, but they're very far and few between. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 High FM. It is 10 minutes to 12. And just to let you know that I don't own any shares in Blacktop. I don't even know the guys, but I went onto their website, a great website. And the point I'd like to make is that when we've got companies that serve our community, when we've got companies that put their money where their mouths are and look after our community and do things for the broader community, those are the companies that deserve our loyalty and deserve at least that we look them up. So please, anybody who advertises on Chai FM, you'll find that the majority of people spend either time or money in the community. And I'm not talking only about the Jewish community. If you fix a pothole in Glenhazel, you fix a pothole for the broader community. There's Glenhazel Primary down Long Avenue. They benefit from it. So please support our sponsors, support our advertisers, and go ahead and have a look at it. I just want to thank Craig for pushing the buttons. Thank everybody for listening. Please go ahead and look at Geltec. Have a look at what they are offering you from a tax deduction, but more importantly, from an investment perspective. Go ahead, look at them. And when you call, just tell Jonty that you heard about it on Chai FM and that you'd like to sit down and discuss it further. As I said, I interviewed him more than 5 years ago the first time, and I've interviewed him a few times since then. Craig, thanks so much for pushing the buttons. Everybody, thank you for listening. We will chat to you next week.